We're absolutely delighted now. We've got a rather special guest who's appearing on the show, and he's on the end of a telephone line. Now, a gentleman who's ridden, some 20,000 miles, a fact that I always wanted to know. He's done 16 million or so, on average, that must be, revolutions of his wheels. He's covered 4 continents, 17 countries, and crossed 71 borders. But there's only one person I know who's done that recently from round here, and that's Ken. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Anton.
Good to hear from you. Now, Ken, whereabouts are you at the present moment? Are you still in distant parts, or I think you're approaching home quite rapidly, aren't you?
I'm getting closer. I'm a little way outside Bristol, actually near Severn Beach. Bit nippy here, so haven't seen many Germans with the towels this morning.
Oh, right, OK. And I guess not too many people have been saying ni hao to you.
not for a while.
That's brilliant. So I guess this must have been a sort of huge journey of learning for you, you know, having covered or seen so many different cultures and countries and sites. But what sort of lessons have you learnt from this event?
I think one of the most sort of striking things, actually, is the people that you meet. And I have definitely come away from this realising, or reminding myself perhaps, that 99.99% of the people that you meet in the world, even if you can't really converse with them, are just good, honest people, just want to get on with their lives, put food on the table, and are, particularly for a solo traveller like myself, so jolly helpful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So, you know, perhaps one of the other lessons you've learned about problem solving?
Yes, I do very firmly believe that so long as you take your time, you pace yourself, then there is just so much you can achieve, and I think that really applies to everybody. Everybody is, I truly believe, is much more capable of doing a lot more than they think they can. Just got to be steady about it, methodical, understand the problems. There's always a solution there somewhere, and you know, in my case, be it from sorting out visas, to simply finding somewhere to camp for the night.
Oh, very good. Yes, okay. I mean, you mentioned the 99.99%, but there's another sort of 0.01%, which probably have been rather difficult for you. I mean, your detention by border guards and things like that must have been a pretty horrendous thing.
Oh, I found myself certainly getting quite stoic about it. Again, just, you know, assess the situation, what's the best way to deal with it, and these things do actually, you know, come out in the wash. And in North America, I used to joke that because I was carrying bear repellent spray, that I always had that for the vanishingly small number of miscreants that I would occasionally see.
Very good, yes. So tell us, who's been your sort of constant companion through this journey?
That would be my Somerset-built trusty steed, affectionately known as Emma, because I just happened to rather like the name, a bit onomatopoeic, I think. And we become very, very attached. I'm very protective of her, not in a sort of a smothering sort of way, but in a kind of, you know, road companion. So she's never far, but I'm stood actually on the phone looking at her as she leans against the gate at the moment.
That's wonderful. I mean, so she's been well behaved all through the journey, has she? No upsets or anything like that?
Actually, she's done remarkably well, and you know, joking apart, she's a really wonderful piece of Somerset engineering. She has, you know, truly done me proud, shall we say.
That's wonderful, Ken. Now, I know you've had some really, really tough challenges whilst you've been out there. Tropical humidity, I gather, in, of all places, Australia.
Yes, I did find, I think I've done dry, cold, wet, cold, all these sort of different climates. And I think, yes, adjusting to the intense humidity during tropical summers, I did find that sort of hard going, and it took me probably a good month to sort of adapt to that. And at first I was thinking, why on earth would you want to live here, you know, unless you carry an air conditioning unit? But then I kind of got that. But yeah, that was hard going.
And well, one of the things that you gave us was a little piece on one of the other tough challenges, which is, of course, on a sort of solo journey like you've been undertaking, is the whole situation of loneliness. I mean, you know, even if you're with a whole crowd of people and so on, it must have been a very odd situation. Can I just... you did this clip, I believe. Was it when you were in China?
Yes, that's right. I sort of had inklings of this in Turkey to some extent, but very noticeable mental challenge in China.
Okay, perhaps we could just listen to that quickly, Ken, 3 minutes or so of what you said when you were sort of halfway through your journey, and perhaps you could then sort of comment on it. Here it comes.
Language difficulties, punctures, the odd minor ailment. These are all problems you expect on the road. They're solvable, sometimes with a bit of ingenuity, some lateral thinking perhaps. You just get on with them. But then there's loneliness, never far away, lurking, waiting for the moment to reappear, catching the solo traveller unaware. You may be in the most beautiful of places, surrounded by the most kind, generous and hospitable people, and still be immensely lonely. But is it such a terrible thing? I find myself reflecting on what I've left behind to spend 4 years venturing on a bicycle around the world. Family, friends, a green, lush land, cosy, comfortable, familiar, a reassuringly simple world, truly beginning to appreciate what I have to return to. But then the insidious self-doubt, sometimes destructive thoughts, gnawing away at one's self-confidence, the perils of an idle mind. You tell yourself this will pass, you know it will, just a squall. And yet it seems so quickly entrenched and willing to budge, like a parasite growing stronger as it saps your own strength. Pedals seem harder to push, colours ebb away, sounds fade. You learn to cope because you have to. Sometimes the very things you might think would exacerbate the situation help push it back into the shadows. News from home, the smallest of tidbits, mere morsels. An email from friends, however brief. The anonymous ticking over of the website visitor counter, knowing that someone somewhere is thinking about you, however fleetingly. Family photographs of growing nieces, celebrations, simple gatherings. And keep the grey matter occupied, on the road, in the tent, every waking moment. Leave no room for loneliness to creep in to gain a foothold. So hard to dislodge. Listening to music, composing the next blog post, plans for the next few days. Just doing stuff. Enough, but not excess, or else you overwhelm yourself, making yourself vulnerable to another episode. Writing about, talking about, discussing it is very cathartic. It's not an affliction, an unspoken evil, simply a natural consequence of travelling alone through an environment where communication with others is difficult, either because there are few people or a language barrier. Not surprising, humans are, after all, a social creature, nothing to be embarrassed about. Being amongst other people, even if the conversation is limited to just a few words, can make a good deal of difference. The merest of social interaction, a simple smile, a warm handshake, just a nod. A little kindness towards strangers, it all helps. But most of all, interaction with native English speakers, or those who understand the real nuances of the language, of Western culture, the unspoken subtleties. A real craving, seeking out Western-style cafes in the cities, the odd expat bar, or simply staying with those working overseas, Australians, Americans, Brits, it doesn't really matter. No longer alone, just for a moment.
Okay, well, that's such an eloquent piece. It almost brings tears to my eyes. I mean, it just you've explained and described there the hardship that you've gone through, and we're just so totally amazed. And we're really, really looking forward as well to welcoming you home tomorrow. I gather you're cycling into your home village of Fitzhead, which is, of course, one of the ten parish villages.
Yes, that's right. All on track to make my return to my home village at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and marking the end of this sort of an odyssey around the world.
Brilliant. So I've got actually on some notes you sent me. You've put down here the lowest point, and it's actually kind of one single item, which I think maybe some of us could all aspire to. And I know one or two other people have had the same sort of experience, having to drink strange brews up in Nepal and places like that. But tell us quite briefly, what was it for you? The worst point, the lowest point.
I think that was back in Kazakhstan, where I met the mayor of the town of Zarkent and was invited to try kumis, which I thought at the time was camel's milk, because I've seen quite a few camels around. But it turns out to be fermented mare's milk. Now, I have to confess, I didn't even think you could milk a horse to start with. And the only resemblance this stuff had to milk was the fact that it was white. And there were kind of warning signs. This sort of chap sort of said, you know, indicated you downed it in one, it was an acquired taste. But wanting to not offend my host, I duly sort of knocked this stuff back, and it was, I have to say, pretty putrid. But unfortunately, and I discovered later that most people just point-blank refuse, I was rewarded with more of this stuff. And let's just say that it has certain laxative properties.
Right, okay. After effects, perhaps. And briefly, your most bizarre moment? I gather you had a ride in a police car. I hope they didn't arrest you.
No, I was lent a police car and driver, actually, in the Republic of Georgia, one of the old Soviet states, to go around and see various local sites.
Yeah.
Some of them were quite bizarre, actually. I mean, things like a water bottling plant. I never imagined I'd visit one of those on this expedition.
Yeah.
And I did remember asking my sort of guide and interpreter whether this was normal even for Georgia, having explained this wouldn't happen in the UK. And even she was bemused by the use of a police car.
I'd imagine. I mean, I know it's not the Georgian language, but in Mandarin, of course, I imagine the policeman would say, ni hao, ni hao, ni hao.
Yes, well, one of my two words of Mandarin that I eventually mastered after 4.5 months. I don't think I'm cut out as a linguist, let's put it like that.
well done, Ken. Could you, again, we've got a nice piece of music lined up for you, and I know you're out in the freezing cold. Where again it is you are?
I'm near Severn Beach, although no plans to go skinny dipping, I can tell you.
Oh, right, so you're sort of up on the coast there somewhere, a bit north of us. Well, wonderful.
Making my way around Bristol.
We're looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, Ken, on your homecoming into the village of Fitzhead at 2 p.m. And so if listeners want to join in that, I mean, we've got reporters there and some drinks and refreshments. And I think it's going to be a fantastic gathering to welcome you home. We're looking forward to that.
I'm very much so catching up with family and friends. And, you know, anybody who's been following me on the blog or is just interested to come along, heard us talk on the radio, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet everybody.
Well, thank you, Ken, for actually keeping us up to date. You talked earlier about communication. Unfortunately, with modern technology, we have been able to keep in touch with you fairly well. Give us one last plug for the cause for which you're doing and where people can go and look at this amazing adventure that you've had over the last 2.5 years.
I'm seeking to raise funds for the Outward Bound Trust. It does a lot of good work in this country, helping young people. I was one of their students at one stage. Kind of realised what they can really achieve. And you can find out more about their work, find out how you can donate safely and securely to them and help me reach my target of at least £1 for every mile cycled by going through my website, which is www.acrosscontinents.org, and as I say, there's information about the trust and about how to make donations to give other people the same opportunity I had quite a few years ago now, I have to say.
Oh, and now don't start showing your age, because it's just wonderful to speak with you, Ken, and we are really just so excited about your entry back into Fitzhead tomorrow and into the community. It's going to be, I think, a very, very special event for us all. So thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ken. Do you like Simon and Garfunkel?
I do, Bridge Over Troubled Water and things like that.
Well,
yes.
I think you probably you've crossed all those bridges, and hopefully Troubled Waters aren't going to trouble you anymore. But this is a nice one by them called Homeward Bound. Ken, thank you for being with us this morning. We're so looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Absolute pleasure, Anton. Looking forward to seeing you as well tomorrow.
Bye for now.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar.